Hi, and welcome to the Get Rich a Teacher podcast. My name is Ola, and I'll be your guide and mentor on your way to a profitable, sustainable, but most importantly, enjoyable language education business. And why would you care to do that? To build a business like that? Because there is literally no other way. The language education market is in a bizarre state. Companies making millions in profit yet paying teachers peanuts. Native speakerism is still way too powerful. And finally, the students are bored of the same old formats and messaging telling them to speak like a native. I'm here to shake things up, to educate and motivate a community of teachers who have the courage to build businesses and teach the language on their own terms, both solo or in their own language schools, and have a positive impact on their students and the world, because teachers are superheroes. Let's claim it today. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode. And today is going to be a very special one because I've got a very special guest with me. The special guest is Gina, lovely, knowledgeable ELP consultant. Welcome, Gina.
Hello, hello, Ola. It's lovely to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me be part of your fantastic podcast.
Oh, thank you. I remember you first invited me, it must have been about a year and a half ago, have a live on Instagram. So it's high time I paid you back that favor.
Thank you. Yeah, I remember that was the first time actually we met online. And then, it was really good. Yeah. So, well, thanks. It's a real pleasure to be here.
Oh, wonderful. So we have a very interesting topic to talk about. But first, I wanted the listeners to get to know you a little bit more. So could you tell us a little bit about what you do? What's your role in ELT and how you got there, maybe? Briefly.
Well, that's an interesting question. I am an ELT marketing consultant. But I've been in ELT for many years. I don't want to say how long. I started in December when I was an English language teacher. Then I became a teacher trainer, then an educational consultant. I worked in educational publishing for many, many years. So, liaising with marketing teams and sales teams. I was part of this marketing and sales team, but editorial teams as well. From the creation of the course books to production and also all the distribution and training the teachers to use the course books and the new methodology. So that was my role for many years and training the agents that represented us. And then I decided to resign from my senior position and became self-employed. So at the beginning, I thought, well, what am I going to do? And actually, one of my colleagues said, well, why don't you do what you know what to do? So I was in marketing and all that part with language school. And I thought, well, that's a good idea. And I did some market research and I realized that actually, language school specifically, they needed support with marketing, especially social media marketing. Mm-hmm. And that's how I started. So I did that part, but because I've got all this educational background in ELT and the teacher training background, all that, I also help now school owners that want to innovate their courses, to find, ways to do that based on education trends. And that's connected also to part of marketing and selling your courses, more and better. So that's what I'm doing now.
What an exciting journey. Amazing. I love it. And I think when we met, you were still not doing it full time. Only you said it was just a bit of a side project. Now it's
actually, it was at the beginning. It was,
So how did you find a transition from working, as you said, in a senior position to basically working for yourself?
Well, quite an interesting one. Because obviously when you are in a role, in a very specific role, you do only that. Okay. Whereas now I have to do a little bit of everything, right? So my core, job, which is, creating marketing strategies and content and training and all that, but I also need to do my own marketing and my own strategy and my own sort of relentless marketing.
Exactly.
Calculation of taxes and, you know, all the stuff that you can imagine. It's just me. Yeah. Every now and then I outsource certain things because, you know, you can't be doing everything. I also, you know, a good way to make good use of your time.
Yeah.
So you have to invest, of course.
Absolutely.
So, but yeah, or for example, what happens when it has good, you know, let's say big projects that involve only the digital marketing part, you know, maybe half also, or for example, sales, then again, I cannot be doing everything. So then I collaborate with other people.
That's brilliant. I feel like that's a little bit of a taboo. I find it very much of a problem with teachers, but language school owners, like people who are more established, they find it extremely hard to outsource.
Yeah.
It is.
No, that's my knife saver. I mean, yeah. And I'm going to give you a very simple example. For example, how did I survive in a job as the one I had before, just pretty intense, with two small kids? I was outsourcing something, all the housework and all the stuff. And I remember, you know, mom say, oh, you know, I don't want anyone in the house or whatever. I said, well, that's not a luxury. I need someone in the house to come and clean and, you know, I need 2 hours, 3 hours of babysitting. And that was that one type of outsourcing. And nowadays, the type of outsourcing, but you need to outsource.
Absolutely. And actually, it's so funny that you mentioned that we're kind of making a little detour from the talk. I think it's super relevant and important. I've been recently reading this book called Do Nothing. And there was a fragment there that said that it's not the money, it's not the success that drastically raise our levels of happiness in life. And there's been research done on this. Wow. It's buying time. And that's how I see outsourcing. It's buying time.
Mm-hmm.
And this will stay with me. And I think it's great that you're talking about this so openly, because I think, again, it's a bit of a taboo, especially with women, isn't
it? It's true. Yeah, it's true. And I even felt guilty sometimes. I have to admit. But it was the way to survive. And it is.
It works.
So you still, like now, right? Like, I've got many projects that are, you know, big, and they need, you know, people to collaborate, and they need, like, and then there are maybe tiny time consuming tasks, let's put it that way, but yes, I can do them, but, you know, I cannot concentrate on more important things, and and so I outsource that. If it is necessary, I do.
Exactly. So clever. So going back a little bit to the marketing subject, do you notice any trends at the moment when it comes to language schools and or teachers and this whole language market in general, when it comes to marketing? Are there any good trends, bad trends?
Yeah,
what are you noticing, I wonder?
Well, a couple of things. One is that they tend to be reactive rather than proactive. So if they are kind of getting enough enrollments, then, okay, let's forget about marketing. You know, but the moment
such
they start,
trap, isn't it? Such a trap.
Yeah. The moment they, not even the moment they start seeing a drop, but after it has dropped, which is even worse, they say, oh my God, we have to do something. And that is the worst moment to take action. Okay. So the best moment is before that, you know, curve goes down.
Exactly.
Okay. It's before. So that means that you have to constantly keep all the, you know, the plates spinning and all the water ball running. Yes. So not when things get me bad. So that's one of the, that's something I have noticed. And the other one is, it's not that healthy. And it's that when they market their courses this year, there's this tendency to, you know, use native speaker teachers as a key selling point. So what happens is, well, first of all, it's not always true. So when the students go to school, they actually see that not all the teachers will be native speakers. So that's not great. Right. But apart from that, from a marketing point of view, as I did quite recently for a blog article I wrote, you know, I went through about 20 ads And I can say that 1 in 10, not sometimes 1 in, you know, just 1 in 10, they're not say native speakers. All the rest.
Wow.
So like first point in the list of things, the ad or in the landing pages, Madrilingua, they call it in Italy.
But I bet it's very much of a thing in other countries as well. Like I've seen it in Spain, I've seen it in Poland. It's generally a trend, right?
It is.
Do you think that is? Why do you think people...
It's because of the perception of the general public. Because the general public isn't educated enough to understand what really matters to be a language teacher. So in their minds, you have to be a native speaker. But we know if you are in the sector, if you are a professional, that's not enough. Now, you know, what really matters is whether you are qualified or not. So if a person, regardless of nationality, is a qualified language teacher, and so that means that they will know how to present new structures, how to help the students learn vocabulary, how to explain grammar clearly without causing more confusion. And also, for example, how to manage a class, how to choose a course box, how to do a needs analysis. So it's a real job. It's a profession, yeah. Okay? You need to know the language, of course, but you also need to know how to teach that language. So what I see, for example, is that people say, oh, you know, we just need, you know, oh, yes, it's a mother lingua, it's a native speaker. Wow, it's a native speaker. I'm like, yeah, okay, is that a qualification? I don't know that one. You know, it is not. So how
it's
can...
It's as if being born somewhere or being of a certain gender was a qualification. I see it this way. Maybe it's a bit of an extreme example, but I find it... Like, obviously, I don't think people do it consciously. I don't think people are meaning to perpetuate this. But I personally think that this is a bit of a...
It's an unconscious bias that exists.
Unconscious bias. And yeah. I think it has a lot to do with things like colonialism, white kind of supremacy. Like, I think those issues are related and they're still very much taboo. It is a bit of a taboo. It's like within our ELT world, it's the most controversial topic because it's the most, it's the hottest thing people discuss and disagree on. At the same time, there aren't alternatives. People don't know what to do, really.
Hmm. Well, I mean, there are two aspects of this question. One is when schools look for teachers to teach at school. And that's when I think, you were talking about supremacy and that. I think that's when those elements come into play. I, for example, when I moved to Italy, that was the first time I experienced discrimination. So I was qualified, I had worked in other countries and everything that you would like a teacher to have. And you know, people say, yeah, but, you know, and the first question was that, are you going to talk? Or, you know, where are you from? Just, I remember feeling like this. People say, where are you from? It's like, I'm from Uruguay. Oh, well, no, we're really sorry about it. Your English is very good, but you've got great qualification. But I'll say, okay, well, and when I actually got the job, the first place where I got the job, they wanted me to change my name from Gina to Jane.
How funny that I had exactly the same experience.
You do?
How funny, with the name. Yeah. When I first moved to the UK, so in the UK, it tends to be extremely politically correct. So nobody would ever ask me. It's like it was a taboo not like to mention that. It's a whole thing. But still, do you think it would be better if you weren't an Ola but an Alex? So like it was suggested that.
And what did you do?
Unfortunately, I listened, and for the time I worked for that particular school, I changed my name. I was an Alex.
Oh, God.
And like, no, like, obviously now it makes me laugh.
Exactly. But
no, I didn't have that. So that is sad because it's
terrible.
As if, like, for me, it looks as if I was hired to do a job that is usually a man's job and somebody would ask me to wear a bra that doesn't show my breast. Literally. It's like hiding your identity because it looks better. Honestly, it's wrong on so many levels.
Yeah. I remember I was shocked. I was shocked and speechless when I had that.
Yeah.
Breast, and then I thought.
But the awareness now is just so much better. So I wonder if the school owners, if still, I would say that there are some professionals, some teachers, some freelancers who still do it, who still use the native speakerism as their USP. But do you think it can be?
No, that happens all the time. So as I was saying, I mean, you have two aspects of this. So it's a school advertising and recruiting teachers and wanting teachers of a certain nationality, blah, blah, blah. And then it's the schools in their courses to the community that they are, you know, saying, oh, we've got native speaker teachers, when very often they don't. But as I was saying, you know, when you analyze all those ads, what you see is that the schools, they all look the same. So if I have to choose a school based on something that they do really nice and unique, I don't know which one, because it's, you know, they all have native speaker teachers, small groups and dynamic lessons. So the only thing I could do is choose one that costs less and is perhaps the closest to where I am, or, you know, there's nothing unique, you know, that they show. So, yeah, so that's you know, the problem. And the teacher is, and the teacher from, you know, the other point of view, you know, from a teacher, I have noticed that very often they come and say, oh, I'm the latest. Mm. And he's like, okay, red carpet. But I remember, you know, the ones that were here maybe temporarily and they got the job because they were a native speaker, they actually couldn't manage the lesson. They make mistakes when explaining, you know, very grammar protocol or catch or whatever, because they haven't studied language. And also they were the ones that, for me, they were entertainers, bowels, because they
couldn't manage. Which is another side, bad side of that same coin. Like, it's not only harmful and ineffective on a marketing level, like from the marketing perspective, but it's also harmful because it kind of puts that native speaker teacher into the role of someone really insignificant, right?
Yeah.
It's just such a big problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Go on.
No, I was saying that. And so the thing is that then you have that teacher that, you know, maybe that teacher plays a musical instrument that, you know, he or she will bring the musical instrument and play the guitar, and then entertaining the students and talking about culture and that kind of thing. And everyone is happy and it's a very kind of keen, deep level. And then at the end of the year, what happens are they are the same level they were, you know, at the beginning. So that's a problem because they have paid to get results. And they thought that they would get because they had, you know, but this is the misconception of the jail public. Yeah. And so the school is actually not managing that really well. And when they advertise, you know, native speaker teachers, et cetera, and it's not true, they're fostering this. And this is a way how we will continue to have, you know, teachers that are not qualified in the role. And it's just wrong, just completely wrong.
Absolutely. I completely agree. And I've always wondered what was first, the chicken on the egg. So like, what was first, the misconception the public has, or the schools and the industry marketing it in this way, like in this lazy way? Because I feel like saying, oh, we have native speakers, so it's obvious, like somebody makes this connection in their work. Oh, a native speaker. Okay, so if I want to learn English, obviously I would learn from a native speaker, right? Like, if I want to learn how to make a pizza, I obviously would learn better from an Italian person. Like, we know how shallow and stupid that is, but it's such an easy thought process. I wonder if it was the public first who had that misconception or the marketers.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I don't know. And by the way, what I have noticed as well, like I worked at school. It was a very good school. They didn't believe in the, you know, native speaker teacher thing. And they have a mix of native speakers and so on. But on their website and on their social media, they were, again, you're boasting about native speaker teachers. And then we had this conversation. Well, you know, if we are going to work together, you know, you need to know that I don't think this is the way to do it for this and this and this reason. And the question was like, okay, but we don't, you know, what shall we do?
Exactly that, right? They don't know. So what could they do? Like, obviously, we don't want you to spill all your secrets here, but what could be a viable alternative to using that argument?
Yeah, I think the key point is to change the focus. Okay, so it's not about nationality, but it's about qualification, the results that the students achieve. And since showcasing testimonials, you know, if your lessons are dynamic, but being it, okay. So make that aspect visible. But as I say, it needs to be analyzed, and every school has different unique qualities. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's the job of the marketer to analyze, to make an analysis, and SWOT analysis, and see, you know, what needs to be communicated loud and clear.
Mm.
Change the focus. I mean, you cannot sit on that, because if you do, then you're not standing out. I think
exactly that.
So Yeah, I think that's the main point I would say.
That's really valuable, because I feel that's relevant to everybody. If people just keep using that language, that kind of way of communicating, because sometimes I bet it comes from fear. Of, oh, everybody does
yeah,
it.
Well, yeah.
We better do it, because otherwise we stand out. But in a, like
otherwise a fact, we will lose students, or we are not going to attract students. But it's a lot, believe me, it's a lot more effective. So imagine, for a generalist marketer, so if a school here goes to whatever marketing agency that works with fashion, wine, whatever, they don't work with education, actually have no idea about education or language education. Of course, they also have that. Unquestioned bias, and they will. The first thing they will do is say, "I'm the Madeline, blah blah blah." Everything that they think is good, okay. But if you actually work with someone that is really specialized and they understand, so you know they will, or a good journalist marketer that does an analysis, they will be able to break out your qualities. So that's one aspect, and also it's important to educate the public. So it's important to give back. But going back to the use or dropping the word monolingual in advertising courses, people are afraid of not attracting students. But actually, as I will say, it's a lot more effective if you, for example, imagine showing your, you know, the figures about exams pass rates, for example. So this person picked past the exam, this person passed, da, 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 da. People go, oh my God. At that point, they don't care if the teacher is from the UK.
Yeah.
Qualified, not qualified. I mean, they just want that. They want those results. Okay. So showcasing that aspect, or maybe a video where, you know, you can see that there is interaction in the classroom with a nice, you know, print. So, you know, they're various ways. You don't have to rely on.
Yeah. I wanted to say, it's so funny that you say about the generic marketers. I was recently doing some research on that, actually on the Polish market. And what I came across was a blog post written by very much of a generic marketing agency who had like a specific service for educational institutions. And they wrote a case study of how they helped one language school with their marketing strategy. And when I read this, I was like, Jesus, this is literally against everything I would tell people. Because it was, so there was advice like, oh, just post words every day.
Mm.
Just say that you've got a native speaker. Exactly what you just said. So It's the bias. It's the not knowing of the industry. And our industry is extremely specific. That
Exactly. It's extremely specific,
isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, no, and it's a different beast as well, because you know it's education. Very often you are not selling the language courses to the student, but maybe children. So the parents are in the middle, they are decision makers. It's a big investment as well. It's not like buying a bag or something to avoid that. It's you just go and do it. So it's a different beast, and it you know, and sometimes people take advantage of those schools that don't know about digital marketing. So, for example, so you post words, you do that, and people will like post because oh, that's building by your courses. That's another thing. So, are you doing posting and praying, or are you doing marketing? So, it's two different things. Okay. What is the role of social media marketing? And, you know, so if we go down that road, you can open a new chapter. So that's the problem. So I have a client that was quite worried about, not having enough comments or not having enough likes. But actually, she was having enough inquiries. And I said, well, you know, do you want to be an influencer or you want to sell your language course?
Exactly what I'm saying to my clients. Exactly that. Is your content or is the things that you do like worthy or credit card worthy? I saw that phrase. And like, we obviously run businesses, or the language school owners, they run businesses rather than influencing platforms.
Yeah, and I tell you what, I mean, I said, well, you know, let's imagine that they want that. They want, so, but it's a different objective. So for example, people come to me because they want to reinforce their brand awareness. They want to create this, trust factor, build it up, support what, their paid campaigns, because that's very important as well. Support in the sense that they both have to run at the same time. One supports the other. So that's what they need. But, they're not going to be an influencer. I mean, if they want that, if they want, they can, work with a different person or maybe even do that themselves. So it's not the likes that count.
Exactly that. And that's so important to always remember. So do you think it's the messaging aspect that language schools mainly struggle with? Or do you find that there are some other challenges that kind of stand out to you when you work with schools?
On social media, yes. I mean, for sure, the copy, the wording. Okay, so that's one. And, when you prepare the social media plan for what you're going to post, it's obviously based on what you want to achieve or what you want to do, etc. And at least I do that way. I start from the message I want to communicate. And then that will help me focus on what visuals I need to communicate to back up that message. So it's a combination of the two.
Right. And people do it the other way around, I bet.
There's a lot of tendency to do it the other way around. Mm. I mean, you can't like give anything for granted, right? So every little detail counts. But most importantly, and that's another big mistake, is that they tend to think, social media will solve all their problems. And
so reliant.
And they forget that social media is just a tiny part of a much bigger picture. Okay, so it's not going to solve.
Such a good point that you're making. And I think, again, whoever is listening today, like most of my audience are teachers, but obviously I've been talking quite a lot recently about how I could help language school owners as well. And I think it's becoming so clear that the challenges are quite similar, but just on a different scale. I think people fall into similar traps. Teachers don't have time for marketing because they only do it in that feast and famine cycle. And they only are reactive, as you said. Same with school owners, because they just have too much to do, right? And there isn't proper strategy. There isn't, I feel that sometimes, exactly as you say, people feel that social media posting will change their lives, save their businesses, because it's the comfort zone. It's quite easy to post anything on social media.
Okay, that will do.
Will it do though? Will it?
No, organically, no. Only a tiny proportion of the people that follow you or connect with you will see what you do. And so, for example, that takes me to another aspect of, for example, repurposing and recycling content. So, they go, oh, no, I would have done that. That photo has been used. And you go, what is it here? Oh, no. A tiny proportion of the people organically probably saw that, and it can be recycled, it can be repurposed. I lost the message. Sorry.
Quickly. The social media is a tiny proportion of
yeah,
that.
I was saying, yeah, exactly. And then you have the, you know, if you want to reach, people that don't know you, then it's more about, you have to move into ads.
As simple as, right?
Yeah, I mean, again, it depends on what you're doing. Okay, so it all depends on your strategy and your objective. So for example, let me give you an example. Let's imagine some now schools or even sites, they do an ad. Let's imagine they do an ad. The person that sees the ad doesn't know you. Before they decide to inquire and, you know, and maybe work with you and roll with you, they will check who you are because, you know, they need to trust. And yes, as they end up, naturally they will go to your profile. And then they find the picture of a cat or the picture of a sunset. A beautiful sunset. Or maybe words, but who knows? That in that case, the organic part is not helping the paid in many ways. I just thought that's what I thought.
Yeah.
But it could be, for example, that, and let's imagine there are no ads, and the only thing that you need is to pass 9K to reassure potential students that what you do is of a certain quality, for example. And so you use your organic social media in a way that it helps you do that. So people going to your website, they probably will check on social media, or people heard about you, they will check on social media, because, you know, social media is now used as
it's just this little like business card very often, right? So I feel, and again, such a great point, because I feel like teachers do the same. They rely, or like they put 95% of their efforts when it comes to growing the audience and attracting potential students and clients by posting organic content. It doesn't really work like this. No. There are other, I'm not saying that everybody suddenly has to pay for ads, but there are definitely other ways, and people need to start exploring them. So social media, yes, it's like a little window to your world. So it has to be relevant. No cats, no sunset, unless it's at sunset with your students, and it's all relevant to what has recently happened in your school.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, it all has to make sense, because people make decisions based on that, as you mentioned, like trust. That's such a key element of online presence, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Because, you know, it's online, so how are you going to trust? So you need certain, factors there to help you trust and decide to go ahead with that teacher, that school. So yeah, I mean, as I say, I don't think there's one way. You know, it always depends on what the situation is and what your objectives are, what your resources are, because sometimes you have great plans and ideas, but then there's no time, or there's no budget is limited. So it's a constant optimization of what you have. So it's very strategic.
Okay. Yeah. You have to work with what you've got, right? Mm-hmm. You can't suddenly give somebody a blueprint and it will work, because everybody has different resources, right? So has to be taken into account. Oh my goodness. I think that this has been such a massive golden nugget for everybody, whoever has been listening. So I just wanted to say that, and that's something that one of my teacher clients has recently commented on. She said something along the lines, when I hear you speak, you sound like a business owner. And I strongly believe that both language school owners and teachers, if they really commit to having successful businesses, to having not even successful, because success is such a tricky word, but sustainable businesses that they can enjoy, they really need to embrace that identity. And with being a business owner comes strategy, comes thinking ahead, being proactive, not reactive, and thinking not about what all the competition are doing or not doing.
Oh, yeah, or not doing, or trying to copy what they are doing. It's panicking about what they are doing. And yeah, I mean, well, it's, you know, let me give you an example. So two schools, okay, one very close to the other one, 100 meters to 100 meters. They both survive and are sustainable, so not to be successful. And how can that happen?
Mm.
Because of course they have, again, they have different, they offer different services in this case. So it's okay, it's a true situation. Okay, they offered completely different experiences. So they attract different people.
Exactly.
Okay, so it's
like we copy-paste, right?
Exactly. I was going to a pizzeria, like the gourmet. So, you know, the gourmet pizza and the, you know, pizza taglio, as they call it, you know, takeaway pizza. You know, you've got, if you're dating, or if you're on a romantic date, you know, where are you going to take the person to the boutique one? And if you are a student and you're rushing because you have to, you're going to go to networks. So you see, so yeah, I mean, competition is another top tier.
Another, exactly. That's a very good idea, actually. I completely agree with you because this is it. People forget that it's not about having the same business as everybody else just because it works, just because you see, oh, I can make money this way. No. It's about thinking how you can thrive, not just survive, because I feel like that's also important, because that's when the owner can be creative. Like I always talk about the mindset side of things quite a lot. So I feel like people need to start thinking a bit more outside the box. Would you agree?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And I don't know if it is because we're all very busy. I don't know, or is the comfort zone? I don't know what it is, but it's easier to go with the flow rather than stop and think. Or yeah, it might be also perceived that if you do nothing, like the title of your book, okay, it's not. But I mean, when you do nothing is when ideas come and
yes,
can connect with your inner self. So that's when you can have that, you know, idea and you can think out of the box and make and then so apply. But, you know, talking about mindset, something I have noticed as well is that, you know, I've got clients that I work with and with a strategy. And a couple of them, very sadly, didn't go too far. And others did quite quickly. So why? It's the same, you know, it's my service is quite the same. Yeah. You know, I put the same attention, da-da-da. And the strategy was designed around their objective, their needs, their da-da-da-da. So what happened? And what is that? Is that apart from having a strategy, and then go back to mindset, you also have to put the work and the energy.
And be patient.
And patient.
And resilient.
Flexible. And, you know, persevere with.
And some people are just not ready for it. Not ready.
No, exactly. And another thing I have noted, talking about landscape, for example, quite recently I've been doing, it's a research because I'm going to be talking at the UK Marketing Conference.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I'm quite excited. Well, that's going to be at the end of this month. And so I wanted to take some fresh data with me I sent some schools a short questionnaire. And, you know, you can tell, so the most successful,
people. Yeah.
Are the ones that I sent them the questionnaire and after a few minutes I had the answers. But they say, yes, we can do it. Done. And then others say, yeah, well, maybe then you don't hear them.
Right.
So all this is action and it's being
it's action. Well,
and, you know, and it's not an easy thing. It's not a strategy won't solve that. That's mindset. That's for you, Ona.
Exactly. I mean, I am a massive fan of strategy, but I feel like mindset is very often the first obstacle. So without that, nothing can really work.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I feel like this has been so valuable. And thank you so much for coming. It was lovely. Do you have anything to plug or to say to people who would want to find you?
Sure. All right. Well, you can visit my website. So that's www.drschoolmarketing.com. And there I've got a blog. I will say, I will share a secret here. I think someone sat down and read the whole blog. Wow. They often need my services. Because there's so much. I think I've been too generous. And so that's my blog. And there you can, you know, if you want to contact me, you'll find me on Instagram as Gina_ELT Consultant. and on LinkedIn as well. So yeah. So and I don't bite. People can contact me, send me a DM, and we can meet for a beautiful coffee. And we have a chat and see if I can be of help somehow.
Exactly. I can confirm Gina is a lovely person. We also had a chance to meet in person on IATFO. Hope that's going to be the case next year as well.
Hopefully.
And yeah, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge, your observations here. I think it's been invaluable. It's just I felt throughout our chat that it's just a massive confirmation of what I always bang on about. But then when somebody external says it, it's going to have more impact. And that's what I wanted.
It's reassuring, isn't it?
Yes. It's great. Yeah, we're definitely on the same page in all those topics. So if you're a language school owner or if you're a teacher and you're still using the native speaker kind of angle as your messaging and marketing,
please
consider moving away. It's not effective. If you don't want to go into the moral aspect, it's not effective. And there are alternatives. And you can just be open to that. Just be open to change, to doing things outside the box. So
yes.
I just wanted to say that I can definitely help. There is a new program going on only for language school owners who want to kind of step into that CEO role. So please, please reach out either on Instagram or via email, which I think Gina is going to contribute to as well.
Yeah.
I may.
I still point, yes, why not?
We are not going to
we've got lots of witnesses.
Except I know. We're being kept accountable. No, but I think that's going to be super, super valuable. If you're a teacher, I think it's still super relevant because all the advice is actually the same. And the only difference is that you kind of have to look at that advice and think about how you can apply it to yourself and your solo business. So once again, thank you so much.
Thank you. No, thank you for sharing your space and for this lovely chat. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks. Thank you. And thank you guys for being here. As always, please subscribe, rate, write a lovely comment. I recently promised that if you write me a little comment on the Apple Podcast and send me a screenshot of that, I would be happy to give you a tiny gift because I would love for this podcast to grow even more. So thank you so much. And I'll see you next week in the next episode. Bye, Gina. You know what, teacher? I'm so proud of you. If you're listening to this, you are ready for a change. Whether it is to quit hassling for peanuts or working with other people who don't respect you, I know you've got it in you, and my podcast is here to help you do that weekly. To be reminded of new episodes, sign up to my newsletter. It's in the show notes. You'll also receive lots of tips, support, and special offers. I'm committed to supporting you also via my coaching programs and courses. You can work with me in my flagship programs, the Rocket Takeoff or the Rocket Accelerator. The Rocket Takeoff will take you off the one-to-one teaching hamster wheel to more peace and more well-paying students. The Rocket Accelerator will help you finally launch a group class that will be perfect for students that are a joy to work with, and so you can leverage your time and do what you love while having space to breathe or read another self-development book. If you're a language school owner, I've got things on offer for you too. Simply go to my website, olakowalska.com, to check them out. Finally, please share this podcast with your teacher friends. Rate it and subscribe. I'm your biggest cheerleader. See you next time.